It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Welcome to the Bloomberg Markets Podcast. I'm Paul Sweeney, alongside my co-host, Matt Miller.
Every business day, we bring you interviews from CEOs, market pros, and Bloomberg experts, along with essential market-moving news.
Find the Bloomberg Markets Podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts and at Bloomberg.com/podcast.
Let's take a look at those meme stocks. I mean, again, when I think about the beginning of the meme stock mania, if you will, it was a lot of smaller cap, mid-cap stocks, high short interest, and easy for these Reddit traders to kind of force a short squeeze, if you will, and it was really exacerbated by social media, but it seems to have broadened out a little bit from that limited kind of scope. Bailey Lipschultz, equities reporter for Bloomberg News, joins us on the phone here. Bailey, thanks so much for joining us here. The meme stock craze, it was there. It kind of went away. I'm thinking GameStop and things like that, but it's come back. What's going on these days?
Well, the biggest difference we're seeing now compared to where it was back in early January or into late January, really, has been kind of this incessant desire to find the next hot stock. And we're seeing that with hedge funds dipping their toe into it. Obviously, people on Reddit or stock twits, or especially Twitter these days, are pumping up their newest bets. It's been really interesting just because we're seeing one stock really pop off for a day or a week, and then very quickly the scope tends to shift, which is obviously, again, very different than what we saw in late January, where GameStop, AMC, Cost, Express were all kind of mimicking each other.
By the way, is that the order now? Is Twitter the king of locations for the meme stock mafia, and then stock twits, and then Reddit? I mean, how should we follow this best?
I think it still probably goes Reddit, Twitter, then stock twits. Twitter, though, definitely has become more and more popular simply because of the way the platform's laid out and the ability to follow individual accounts that may have more insight or perceived insight than others. Reddit still kind of is a wild, wild west where there's a mega thread and a lot of GameStop being pushed. And then I would say StockTwits probably is third in line, but we're definitely seeing more of a focus on Twitter over the last month or so, just because I think the layout kind of amends itself more toward a average gambler or an average investor, excuse me, or someone
average
else
gambler.
Kind of a hedge fund paying attention.
I think average gambler is fine.
Yeah, that's fine.
I think even the apes would be fine with that.
So, Bailey, talk to us about, like, I'm starting to see some more reporting that it's not just the retail investors or, you know, the Dave Portnoy's of the world from Barstool Sports, who's got a big social media following, but it might actually be some professional investors, hedge funds getting in it. Do we have evidence that
Goldman's got an algorithm?
What's that?
Goldman's got an algorithm.
An algorithm, right. So, I mean, what's the role of the professional investor in here, Bailey?
I think they're kind of picking off where they can make money. Obviously, if you just look at alone some of the trading volume in these stocks, it's kind of hard to sit back and argue that a retail crowd is able, to trade hundreds of millions of shares of AMC while also investing in Wendy's and other parts of the market. So I do think, and we have been hearing more and more, that hedge funds have to be playing some part in this, especially when you look at kind of some of the call option trading and the underlying stock trades. It can't really be, in the consensus that I've been hearing more and more from my sources, is that it can't really be just a coordinated retail attack. It has to be folks on Wall Street, your professional traders, who are kind of jumping in on these trades, and whether they're getting in earlier or later, continuing to help ride some of the momentum, are definitely playing a part.
I'm waiting for a hedge fund to embed people on Wall Street bets. I saw the other day somebody posted a screenshot of his TD Ameritrade account with a $1 million investment in a meme stock, And I thought, oh, this has got to be a hedge fund dude who just wants to pretend he's among the masses and try and speak as insensitively as he can to stir up some drama around his stock. Also, they don't want to call it a meme stock. I know a lot of people on Wall Street Bets Now are saying, hey, Corsair's not a meme stock. That's not fair. Do you hear that a lot, too?
Yeah, no, I think you're seeing a divide. I remember I wrote something. We mentioned Build-A-Bear in the meme stock basket back in January, and the amount of people who emailed me saying Build-A-Bear is not a meme stock. It has a solid core business, and we're fundamentally long it. I think the term meme stock gets thrown around a bit, and depending on who's investing in the company or what the company is, definitely does trigger pushback because they don't want to group, you know, some of these other companies with the likes of, you know, an AMC trading at the market cap it is at now, yeah, or something like Express.
It is definitely fascinating. Bailey, thanks so much for joining us. Bailey Lipschultz, equities reporter for Bloomberg News. I tell you, you can lose time. I went on Wall Street Bets the other day, and I looked up, and all of a sudden an hour had passed. It was like I was playing Red Dead Redemption 2 or something.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
When Chairman Powell does speak this afternoon at 2:30 Wall Street time, which Bloomberg will bring to you live, investors will be focusing on many topics, but clearly inflation is top of the list. Does the Fed chairman continue to believe that the inflation we are seeing in this economy is transitory, or is it perhaps something more? That'll certainly be key. Let's check in with Marcus Schommer. He's a chief economist for Pine Bridge Investments. Marcus, I'd love to get your thoughts here on inflation and how you're viewing it, and maybe what we might hear from Chairman Powell on this issue.
Well, it's nice to be back on the show. And, you know, those are the themes that I talk to a lot of our clients about as well. I don't think we're going to hear much from the Fed and from Powell today. I think they still have enough time to hide behind the transitory fence that they've built around this issue. I've sort of been quite critical of this because we're seeing inflation everywhere, right? And we shouldn't forget what the Fed is doing is they're choosing the smallest, narrowest, and slowest inflation measure that we have, where everywhere else outside of the PCE deflator, which they prefer as their inflation measure, in CPI, in PPI, in financial markets, in the housing market, everywhere else inflation is running much, much higher than what they measure. But we kind of know that. They're hiding behind this CPI, this PCE
deflator.
Have they
backed themselves into a corner, Marcus? I mean, that's what a lot of people are starting to say. You know, they can't get out now without roiling markets.
I don't think it's a corner. I think they don't see it that way. They want to be there. I mean, I think what they're telling us is actually honest. They think running the economy hard is a good idea, whereas if you look at the economy, I'm not so sure that it is such a good idea because I start to see more and more signs that rising inflation, rising prices are now slowing growth. Because that's also the answer to this question, is inflation transitory? And in my view, inflation is always transitory if it doesn't also translate into higher wages. Because if prices go up, purchasing power goes down, and consumption will slow. And I think that's what we're starting to see. Mm. I'm getting more nervous about the growth outlook in the U.S. in the second half because of the surge in prices that we've seen and the lack of follow-up in wages.
So, Marcus, but as you were suggesting here, wage inflation, we haven't generally seen it. And even before the pandemic, when we were running at, you know, effectively, you know, full employment, wage inflation was only, you know, 3.5%. I mean, that didn't seem too terrible. Do you think wage inflation is a material risk for this U.S. economy?
No, I think it's the opposite, right? If we were to get wage inflation, then this growth story can continue, we would have a different narrative then. We have to talk about, you know, too much inflation and too much growth potentially, and that would be a problem for the Fed. But I think what we're seeing right now is prices are going up because we have supply issues and we have this stimulus-fueled demand surge at the same time, but wages are not keeping up. So consumer purchasing power is going down. Real incomes are declining, and that will slow growth in the second half, and that, I think, feeds very well into that position the Fed is in. They don't care about the inflation. They want interest rates to stay low. And if the economy actually slows a little bit in the second half, that plays perfectly into their narrative. And they're going to be sitting there doing nothing, I think, for the rest of the year.
So Mohammed El-Erian writes a piece for us today. He basically says what the Fed should be doing is start now reducing exposure to a more risky posture by moving forward with a partial pivot. I'm quoting directly from his op-ed. In light of the changed circumstances, thereby keeping their options open and better balancing risk. But that's not what they're going to do. And he says that really they risk both an economic recession and financial market instability, especially the latter, Marcus. The concern that financial market instability is one of the big risks is something we're hearing echoed across global Wall Street because, you know, with rates this low, everybody gets such cheap money. You know, junk bonds are trading at their tightest spreads in all time. And it just seems like, you know, ratings agencies are coming out upgrading everybody because they don't have to pay very much to service this debt. But meanwhile, leverage is growing and growing and growing. Isn't it a worry?
I think it should be a worry on the Fed's radar screen. That's true. But I think Mohammed El-Erian is still looking at the old world, right? Remember a couple of years ago when Janet Yellen was raising rates, the argument was, well, we need to raise rates so we can cut them again, right? We need to sort of refill the arsenal so we can do something in the next crisis. The Powell Fed doesn't think that way at all. They think right now we're fine. We're only going to do something if there really is a problem on the horizon. Then we will change. So where we are today is normal, is neutral. This is where we're going to stay until something changes. There's no idea that, oh, if things are not so bad anymore, we need to go back to something as neutral. That's not the way the Powell Fed looks at it. So I think we will get nothing from the Fed for the foreseeable future.
Marcus, just real quick, 30 seconds here. How do you view GDP for the remainder of this year and next year? What's your forecast?
Well, I actually think we're going to, that's why I was saying earlier, I think there's a bit of a downside risk emerging here for GDP. But, you know, the numbers are so high, so much above what's normal, what we all think is sort of the underlying potential growth rate, whether it's going to be 5% this year or 6% or 7%, that's sort of the range of all the forecasts. Our number is 5.9, but I don't have a lot of confidence in that number. Next year's number will also be significantly above potential. I think that's all that matters.
All right, Marcus, thanks very much for joining us. Marcus Schommer there, chief economist at Pine Bridge Investments, talking to us about the Fed. We're all going to be watching. There's special coverage starting today at 1:30 p.m. Wall Street time with Tom Keene and Lisa Abramowitz. This is Bloomberg. I want to bring in Daniel DiMartino Booth. We've been waiting to hear from her all day. CEO and director of intelligence at Quill Intelligence, a former advisor to the Dallas Fed, also a Bloomberg opinion contributor, and she's got a lot to say about what we should expect today. Danielle, there has been a brewing, a brewing opinion, anti to the Fed, to the Fed's outcome-based framework, coming from Peter Hooper at Deutsche Bank, Andy Haldane at the Bank of England, now from Mohammed El-Erian as well, though he's been writing about this for a while, saying that they're really taking a huge risk and really getting into danger by sticking to this policy of watching and waiting for inflation, transitory, so they say, to go back away. What do you think?
I think you have to look at the fact that the Fed is taking comfort from certain silos, if you will, of inflation. If you look at the CRB index, for example, it's down on the week. And we've seen the number of commodities that are rising come down appreciably. So the Fed's going to take comfort in that pocket. On the other hand, we're seeing the kind of inflation that becomes sticky become very problematic. Zillow reported that rents are up 2+% in May over April in the largest cities, the top eight cities of the in the United States. It were 15%. So if this starts to percolate through, it's the largest input to inflation. The Fed's going to have a serious problem on its hand, especially because it's playing chicken with the millions of people who are slowly flowing back into the labor pool. That process won't end, if you will, until after schools have fully reopened and the supplemental unemployment benefits have fully expired nationwide.
So, Danielle, before I ask this next question, I have to preface it by saying you are the author of a book entitled Fed Up, An Insider's Take on Why the Federal Reserve is Bad for America. So my question is, has the Fed, I mean, are they basically done? Should they just step away here and say, okay, we did our job here. Now we're going to let this economy kind of go on its own?
I think that if the Fed was to do a full rip off the Band-Aid approach, that the harm that would be created, given stocks remain in the 99th percentile historically, would do more damage than they're acknowledging that inflation's become problematic. They have a very elegant solution, however, and that is that they can pull back from their mortgage-backed security.
Okay.
It's become very damning optically. The housing market, nobody doubts that housing has run off the rails. And they could say, you know what, and in fact, yesterday, the New York Fed released a statement saying that they were going to be test driving. They're going to be testing out outright selling mortgage-backed securities starting next week.
Will that do anything to help the housing market?
Well, if the housing market has overheated, right, too much stimulus or too little stimulus can break housing. And that's what we've learned in the current episode, that too much stimulus can actually break housing. So if the objective is to take some of the heat out of the market, you would certainly do that by reducing those mortgage-backed securities markets and getting the Fed out of the mortgage market.
Danielle, how do you view the labor market here? You know, where the jobs that have been added have been over the last couple months have been less than expected. And, you know, I presumably that gives the Fed some more leeway to kind of stay on the sidelines here. The risk of wage inflation presumably is not necessarily front and center. How do you view the labor market?
So, again, I think that it is a wait and see. We are seeing the unemployment rate in these states that are pulling out, four states last Saturday, eight states this coming Saturday, 25 total between now and July 19th. We are seeing activity and movement move up in these states as these labor pools are replenished. We're also seeing teenagers pour into the labor market at the fastest pace since, I think, 2008. I mean, it's a magnificent number. That's great for teens. They're going to make a ton of money this summer. My 17-year-old was offered $18 an hour just yesterday.
Wow.
So basically doing nothing. So because it's the low-skilled work that needs to be fulfilled. And you know, people aren't factoring in the fact that it's not just people going from, say, an average of $630 to $330 a week in unemployment benefits. If they're on extended stay, the gig workers, the 1099s, the contract workers, if these states are pulling the plug early, they run their safety net goes away completely. And you have rental eviction moratoriums that are expiring also at the end of June. So, you know, I think the Fed's wait and see on wage inflation is appropriate for a little while longer until we know what the labor pool really, what the population of the labor pool truly is here in the coming 12 weeks.
I think you're underestimating the skills of your 17-year-old. I just want to quickly ask you.
He can fly a plane.
Oh, that's good.
All right.
Maybe. Airlines need pilots.
Then he should be getting paid more. I just want to quickly ask you. We only got about 30 seconds here, but I've been watching the reverse repo facility with wide eyes. Is it really that big of a deal, or I mean, what's happening there?
So, you know, it would be that big of a deal had we not had yesterday, .. And one data point does not make for a trend, but the fact that we came down from 584 to 509 as the Treasury's checking account that tells that the Fed, if you will, is depleted as we head into the end of July when they want to get that balance down to $500 billion. I think that as long as we see these numbers continue to come down, they might pop back up, by the way, going into quarter end. They always do, window dressing purposes. But as long as we see that it's coming back down, then the Fed can claim it's purely mechanical in nature. If it keeps going up, that starts to flash credit risk.
All right, Danielle, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate getting your thoughts on this Fed Day. Danielle DiMartino Booth, CEO and Director of Intelligence at Quill Intelligence. and a former advisor at the Federal Reserve of Dallas and a Bloomberg opinion contributor. We'll have more coming up. This is Bloomberg.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do. The people in the spotlight, athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Well, the metrics as it relates to vaccines, they remain positive here in the U.S. The reopening is continues to accelerate. We saw the state of California fully reopen, New York yesterday fully reopened, joining a number of other states. So the question is, how do you play that in the stock market? Scott Wren, senior global market strategist for the Wells Fargo Investment Institute, joins us. Scott, thanks so much for joining us here. You know, love to get your thoughts on kind of your positioning in the equity markets here. We've, you know, had this rotation trade into, let's call it some cyclical names, some smaller cap names, some names that might benefit from, you know, a reopening economy. They performed so well and perhaps even outperformed, you know, some of the tried and true growth stocks, the Amazons, the Apples of the world that have been such good performers really since the financial crisis of 12 years ago. How do you kind of think about, you know, your portfolio construction talking to your clients?
Well, Paul, I think you have to say to yourself, is this recovery in the early stages, which we think it is? Do we think it's going to be a global recovery? We do. So we've been leaning toward these more cyclical areas, these more cyclical sectors like, you know, financials, industrials, materials. As a matter of fact, just about a month ago or so, we downgraded tech, we downgraded consumer discretionary, and we had been overweight those two sectors for a long, long time. So we want, you know, growth's going to have to participate here if the market's going to do what we think it's going to do over the next 6 months or 18 months. So we have a full allocation to tech, which is about 26% of the market cap of the S&P 500. But we have been basically leaning toward those sectors. Energy is included in that, communication services, materials that we think are going to participate. So that's what we've been talking to our clients about.
Is that in the U.S., Scott, or is that, are you talking about globally? Because we've already seen the run up there. Yeah,
right. You know, and we have, and we've stuck with them, and I think we're going to, we're going to have some back and forth here, especially whether it's around a Fed meeting or are we going to have a lot of inflation or not, which is obviously a key question. But, you know, we like emerging markets as well as an asset class. And if you look at China, South Korea, Taiwan, you know, they're going to make up whatever EM index you're looking at. They're making up the bulk of the market cap. And, you know, if those countries are doing well, which we think they are, dollars a little lower, commodity prices are up. We think emerging markets is a good place to be.
Scott, what do you expect to hear from Fed Chairman Powell today?
Well, I think it's going to be largely status quo. And what I believe that means is that acknowledging that, you know, growth has really come back quickly, that we're seeing some higher inflation, that the Fed believes it's transitory, and we certainly believe that inflation is going to decelerate in 2022. I think it's key, you know, the market's going to be hanging on. Is the Fed talking about potential tapering? And I believe it was a Bloomberg interview I saw with Loretta Mester. And she said, you know, we've been talking about the exit strategy since we had the plan together. So, you know, I think it's naive to think that the Fed is not talking about what the end plan is to remove some of this accommodation. But, you know, for us, we think it's likely not today. We think it could be at Jackson Hole or it could be in September, something like that. But I think for now, you know, the Fed was all in on these easy policies, you know, just really the last meeting. So I don't think they're going to, you know, make a big turn here in just one meeting. and it's likely to start to be an easy turn probably a couple of meetings from now.
So what do you think about rates? Does it make sense to you to see the 10-year at 149? Since, you know, if the Fed steps out of line at all, it has to be to the hawkish side. It's not like they can get any more dovish. And if they do that, don't you see a sell-off in treasuries?
Well, I tell you, Matt, you know, as an old foreign exchange guy and as an equity strategy guy, it's you know, when I think about the growth we expect, 7% this year in the U.S., 5.3% next year, is it hard for me to rationalize a sub 150 10-year? It absolutely is. Now, we know there's a lot of demand out there for yield, you know,
negative yield.
And that's part of it. Yeah. And a negative real yield, actually. Obviously, as you said, but it is a bit of a mystery. We think it's going to back up a bit, maybe 2.25 by the end of this year, 2.5 by the end of 22. So we certainly do expect rates to better reflect the type of economic environment that we think we're in and headed toward.
Totally good to get some time with you, Scott. Always love getting insight from you. Scott Wren, Senior Global Market Strategist at Wells Fargo Investment Institute. Thanks for listening to the Bloomberg Markets Podcast. You can subscribe and listen to interviews at Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast platform you prefer. I'm Matt Miller. I'm on Twitter at MattMiller1973.
And I'm Paul Sweeney. I'm on Twitter at PT Sweeney. Before the podcast, you can always catch us worldwide at Bloomberg Radio.
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.